content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The May issue of Our State Magazine features articles all about moms in a section entitled Legacy of Love, a Mother's Day Tribute. But first up is the welcome message entitled Pressing Matters by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson. My mom tells me this harrowing story about the time she got her arm caught in the wringer washer at her grandmother's house in the late 50s when she was just a little girl. Up to her elbow in that washer, she hollered for help until her grandmother, who was outside pinning clothes to the line, came running and popped the lever release. That would have been it for me, but my mom, who was 8, went right back to it, feeding the clothes through the wringer to squeeze out the water. She didn't think of it as a chore. It was just something that needed doing, like sweeping the front porch or bringing in wood for the stove. She loved helping her grandmother, even then loved staying busy. But what she really wanted to do, the thing she begged most to do, was iron. She was 9 when her grandmother agreed, starting first with doilies and aprons, then pillowcases. There was no ironing board. They used the kitchen table, clearing space among the canning jars. Her grandmother showed her how to spread the cloth flat, how to dip her fingers into a shallow pan of water and flick droplets across the fabric. The pillowcases were made from Julian Milling Company feed sacks, printed with tiny flowers, violets, and daisies, and my mother thought they were just beautiful. Later, as a teenager, she ironed for the neighbors. 25 cents per piece, blouses, work shirts, anything with a collar. She spent weekends doing it, moving the iron in a rhythm as natural as breathing. When she married my dad, she ironed all his clothes, his button-downs and slacks, and although he would have been fine having them dry cleaned, my mom wouldn't have it. He bought her a brand new harvest gold ironing board, set it up in the spare room, and added a table for her sewing machine. And in between changing diapers and making supper, she would stand and iron, never once calling it a burden or a chore. It was just what needed to be done, and she did it. She doesn't iron much now. There's no need. She wears what's comfortable, what doesn't need pressing. But when she does plug in the iron, maybe for a blouse to wear to dinner, she still uses the same Black & Decker, quick and easy from my high school years. It's once white handle, now yellowed, the labels rubbed off, the sole plate burnished to a dull shine. The model's long been discontinued, a relic from a time when you bought something once and kept it forever. My mother sees no reason to replace it, not when this one's worked so well for so long, lasting through a lifetime of shirts and pillowcases, seams and sleeves, decades since spent smoothing out the wrinkles. I don't have children, so I don't know what it's like to patch a skinned knee, to stir a pot while someone tugs at your sleeve, or to iron a child's clothes late at night so they'll wake up to something neat, something comfortable, something done for them before they even knew they needed it. But I do know what it's like to grow up in the presence of someone who folded the towels and swept the crumbs, and stirred the gravy, and tied the shoes, and wiped the counters, and ran the errands, and never once called it a sacrifice. Never called it anything at all. Just did it. Because that's what you do when you love someone. I know what it's like to grow up with the scent of warm cotton in the air, and the feeling that somewhere, someone in the house, somewhere in your life, is always taking care of you. And now I will take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay entitled Steeped in Tradition, featuring stories all about tea. It's always tea time in the old North State, from a steaming morning mug to an elegant afternoon gathering, and every sweet sip in between. And there's a photo here, and it's also on the front page of the magazine, of a picture of ice and sweet tea with a lemon wedge on the side, along with two glasses with lemon wedges, iced tea. and a barbecue sandwiches in the background. Parker's Barbecue, Wilson. What's more satisfying than sweet iced tea served alongside a heaping plate of Q? Parker's Barbecue has been perfecting this pairing since 1946. Tables can order sweet tea by the pitcher, and many customers do. They know that this is a delicious place to settle in, fill up, and take a long sip. Parker's Barbecue is located on U.S. Highway 301 South in Wilson, and they have a website, ParkersBBQWilson.com. A historic tea party, Edenton. On October 25, 1774, Penelope Barker and 50 other women signed the Edenton Resolves, a letter vowing to boycott British tea and textiles in protest of the Tea Act of 1773. This is considered one of the first known acts of protest organized by women in the colonies. In the resolution, the women wrote that they felt a sense of duty to adhere to the boycott of taxed British goods, which was originally established by North Carolina's Provincial Congress. Edenton has commemorated these women through a bronze teapot that sits atop a Revolutionary War-era cannon. At Edenton Tea Companies, visitors can purchase replicas of the circa 1905 teapot, as well as the loose-leaf teas, teaware, and gifts, reminders of the centuries of history that have brewed in this waterfront town. And there's a photo here of the home of Edenton Tea Party protester Penelope Barker, which was moved to its present location overlooking the Albemarle Sound in 1952. And it's a classic home from that era. It's sort of federal style, but it does have a double-decker porch, two chimneys on each side, a sloping roof, and shutters, white, and a decorative it's raised up from the ground, so there's decorative brickwork underneath, and it's on the water, surrounded on one side by trees and the other side by water. And then there's also a photo of a bronze teapot that commemorates the bronze teapot that commemorates the protest. And I was trying to read this. It says, "On this spot stood the residence of Mrs. Elizabeth King, in which the ladies of Edenton met October 25th, 1774, to protest against the tax on tea." Next in our tea journey is the Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham. Each month, a centuries-old Japanese ritual is practiced in the tea house at Sarah P. Duke Gardens. Here, the Japanese tea practitioners of Durham, led by Shizuko Soyoshi, guide guests in chanoyu, the traditional Japanese way of tea. Chanoyu is just as much about the ritual, the specific process that hosts use to purify their utensils and minds as they prepare and serve matcha, which is a powdered tea made from ground green tea leaves, as it is about the tea being served. And we have a photo here of the Japanese tea practitioners of Durham. And they serve the green tea to the guests. And there's a picture of the green tea in a, it really looks like a bowl, but I'm sure it's considered a cup, but there's no handles on the cup. And they are dressed in traditional Japanese garb. The atmosphere created by the tea house and surrounding garden provides a distinct experience for tasting matcha, Soyoshi says. For her, being in the tea house feels like being in Japan. As a teenager, Soyoshi learned chanoyu from her aunt, and she's been practicing it at Duke Gardens since 2009, 2 years after the tea house was built. She took over the program from the founder, Nancy Hamilton, in 2013. Even with years of experience, the way of tea, Soyoshi says, is a lifelong study. And there's a picture of the tea house, the tea room, and guests actually enter through the tea house's crawl-through door. They have to get on their knees and go in through this very door that's maybe 3 feet tall, it appears, in the picture. Inside the tea house, the host, Chizuko Soyoshi ladles hot water into a bowl for the tea. And there's a traditional sort of, looks like a mini pot-bellied stove. And there's a pot sitting on top of it. And she's on her knees. With a, they can see the ladle that she's that's mentioned into a little oven, if you will, with a little pot on top. Next up is afternoon tea. Enjoy the traditional practice of afternoon tea and pastries in spots across the state, from lush green gardens to sophisticated parlors and cafes. And our first afternoon tea destination is the O. Henry Hotel in Greensboro. Join the Greensboro tradition of afternoon tea at the sophisticated O. Henry Hotel. The rich wood-paneled social lobby is the setting for special packages pairing 15 tea options with treats like vanilla scones, cucumber dill cream cheese sandwich, and chicken salad phyllo tarts. Tea can also be enjoyed with Devonshire clotted cream and French champagne. And the photo here shows a three-tiered server and with the savories at the bottom and sweets and savories on the middle and sweets at top. And then in the room itself, the ladies are gathered around in comfortable chairs and settees around a low table, such as a coffee table, or maybe in this case it's a tea table, and drinking their tea and enjoying their treats. Yeah, they have a website. O. Henry Hotel is located on Green Valley Road in Greensboro, and they have a website, ohenryhotel.com/O-Henry-T. Our next afternoon tea destination is Farrington House in Pittsburgh. In the dining room or on the manicured lawn of the Farrington House restaurant, indulge in an afternoon classic tea, an elegant afternoon of classic tea, pastries, and sandwiches. Served Thursday to Sunday, Farrington House's menu of Harney and Sons teas and sweet and savory bites changes daily, but the hospitality of this luxurious Chatham County retreat endures. And they have a picture here. They have a little garden set up, garden seated table there, and there's a lady seated there and a gentleman who is serving her. There's the three-tiered treats. And he's serving her a cup of tea in the gardens, which there's different flowers in bloom and a low hedge in front of the Farrington House. If you'd like more information about their offerings, they're located on Market Street in Pittsburgh. And the website is farrington.com/afternoon-tea. And Farrington is spelled F like Frank, EARRINGTON.com/afternoon-tea. Another location for afternoon tea is A Southern Cup in Hendersonville. Reserve a tea time with lace tablecloths, fine sips, and delicious bites at this charming mountain tea room and boutique. They're on Greenville Highway, and their website is asoutherncup.com. If you're closer to the coast, there's the Calabash Garden Tea Room in Calabash. For a traditional Victorian-style tea, enter the Calabash Garden Tea Room, where sandwiches come on tiers embellished with fresh flowers. They're located on Beach Drive in Calabash, and their website is rather long. It's calabashgardentearoomnc.com. If you happen to be a little further north, try Kernersville, the Flower Box Tea Room and Cafe. Find flower-pressed cookies and seasonal treats along with teas ranging from Victorian Earl Grey to Scottish breakfast tea at the British-inspired Flower Box. They're on Highway 66 South in Kernersville, and their website is theflowerboxtearoom.com. Moving to the town of Cameron at the Lazy Fox Lavender Farm. The dream for Lazy Fox Lavender Farm began not in the countryside of Moore County, where the sprawling farm now sits, but rather in the lavender fields of southern France, where the Lochner family first learned the European tradition of distilling flowers into products like tea and butter. While the Lochners came up with the name of their farm well before buying their property, they wished to pay homage to the tradition of fox hunting in the area. "We wanted it to be fun and whimsical, too," Lindsay Lochner says of the name. "If you know anything about lavender or foxes, a fox is anything but lazy, except when it's in a lavender field, because lavender relaxes you." Visitors enjoy unwinding, too, when the farm opens in the spring for its season of events. The Lazy Fox Lavender Farm tea is proudly sourced from the Asheville Tea Company. Clem and Lindsay Lochner, along with their four children, returned home to the United States when Clem retired from the Army, establishing the farm in Cameron in 2022. And there's a picture here of the family in the midst of multiple lavender plants enjoying tea. The fields hold 12 different varieties of lavender and surround a restored 1910 farmhouse with a side veranda that hosts early morning tea parties served on antique fine china. This May 10th, you can try lavender-infused tea, pastries, and lemonade at the Mother's Day High Tea. Beyond tea time, guests can also explore the farm, peruse the parlor store, and discover an ice cream truck that serves lavender lemon ice cream. That sounds good. The Lazy Fox is a working farm, so visitors should check hours before traveling. And they're located on Edgewood Road in Cameron, North Carolina, and their website with more information is lazyfoxlavenderfarm.com. Moving a little further west to Winston-Salem, there's Chad's Chai. For Chad Morris, the community that tea fosters is as compelling as the tea itself. Inspired by neighborhood gatherings spent sharing chai, Morris began experimenting with Indian spices. After 13 years of selling tea without a brick-and-mortar store, he opened Chad's Chai in 2023. The tea house is known for its interesting flavors, including lavender basil and the seasonal Moroccan mojito. And there's some photos here that are interesting. They're very colorful. He offers a curated selection of matcha and chai blends, iced teas, and more at their downtown Winston-Salem tea house. And these are not labeled, so I don't know what they are. They're just a variety of different textures. And some are powdered, some are ground. A little more roughly. And then we have some colorful teas that are iced as well. There's one that's a deep red color, more of a peachy color, almost like a little bit of an iced tea looking. And then there's a yellow one that might have lemon in it. They're located on North Liberty Street in Winston-Salem, and they have a website, chadschai.com. Moving a little south, let's look at Winter Bloom in Fayetteville. Toast to the unexpected at Fayetteville's Winter Bloom Tea, where colorful spirit-forward tea cocktails have gained a following. Owner Josh Choi's crafted recipes include the Aegis, a combination of berry immunity boost tea, fruit juices, and spirit whiskey, and Kong's Cup, made with matcha, banana rum cream, frangelico, and espresso, among many cheerful others. They are located on Hay Street in Fayetteville, and they have a Facebook page. If you're on Facebook, search for Winter Bloom Tea. And there's a couple of photos here showing there's a cozy, looks like velvet furniture, but casual, yet, you know, with upscale looking with the velvet furniture of dark green. And vintage photos, colorized photos on the wall. There's a cocktail shown here as well that's sort of peachy, almost like an iced tea on the bottom with a little foam on top. And it's called Lafayette Cocktail, and it combines rosebud tea, cardamom, lemon, orange, and rosé vodka. All right. Uptown Tea Shop in Waxhaw. When the weather warms, customers flock to Uptown Tea Shop's front porch for a different kind of treat, a float featuring unsweetened tea topped with a choice of flavored sorbet from Waxhaw Creamery. Owner Danny Noto founded Uptown Tea Shop in 2017, and the floats followed soon after. They're light, sweet, and refreshing. They're Noto's spin on a Southern tradition. And this is in an older home, and I can see the front porch that they mentioned there. It's Uptown Tea Shop. It's a they're located on East South Main Street in Waxhaw, and they have a website, uptownteashop.com. Next up, in the center part of the state, the Sweet Tea Cafe in Durham. Roman Gabriel, owner of the Sweet Tea Cafe in Durham, takes the phrase, made with love, quote, to heart. When he was young, his grandmother taught him how to harness sunlight to brew sun tea. Today, he makes his own specialty blend under the brand Roman's Tea. He describes the teas, which also include the essence of peaches, lemons, mandarin oranges, spearmint, and organic cane sugar, as liquid sunshine. They certainly look like it. When the sun hits just right, the glass bottles glow. And we have a picture here of some sun tea. And they're served in a, looks like a customized ball jar and a pitcher. And the sun certainly is glowing through the glass bottles. Sweetened with fruits and micro-brewed in small batches, Roman's teas, classic sun teas, plus slushies, lemonade, and more are served fresh at the Sweet Tea Cafe. They're located on Mount Moriah Road in Durham, and they have a website, romanstea.com. And I'll spell that for you because it's a little different than you might think. It's R-O-M like mother, A-N like November, Z like zebra, T like tango, E like echo, and A like apple, romanstea.com. Don't forget that Z in there. Now we're moving a little bit further south, east. Yaupon Tea Company, Wilmington. Chances are you've walked past a Yaupon holly shrub without even realizing it. In fact, Andrew Kiley, co-founder of Yaupon Tea Company, literally stumbled upon one while doing field work at UNC Wilmington. Yaupon, which is native to the southeast, is a caffeinated plant whose leaves have been used by indigenous peoples for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. Since 2021, Yaupon Tea Company has worked with local farmers and landowners to wild harvest tea leaves, emphasizing sustainable, regenerative practices. Hot or cold, the resulting tea is earthy and floral, a true taste of NC. And we have a picture of the tea. It looks like any other tea to me. It's sort of honey-colored, and it's being poured out of a glass teapot into a little smaller glass. And for more information about Yaupon Tea Company, looks like they have a store, yaupon.store/about-us. Yaupon, which is spelled Y-A-U-P like Peter, O-N like November, .store/about-us. Well, for the rest of the time that we have left on this episode, I'm going to switch to a column that's a new column, North Carolina Naturally, Exploring the Landscapes and Living Things in Our Great Outdoors. This one is called A Match Made in Nature. The close relationship between butterflies and flowers is obvious, but swallowtails and azaleas take it to another level. It's easier for those of us reared in North Carolina to take azaleas for granted with their paper-thin petals on sturdy branches, their stout leaves, their mouths open to the world. Some of the first plants to bloom, azaleas enwreath our homes, our schools, and churches. Purple, pink, and white clouds, bonfires of red or orange make passageways to our places, ring our trees. In the coastal plain in Piedmont, azaleas largely grow as the prim, wieldy bushes lauded at Wilmington's 5-day festival held in their honor. In the West, however, their wilder cousins bloom naturally. Here, rhododendron and flame azaleas need no shoveling spades to grow, nor do they confine themselves to yards and borders. Their neighborhoods become wild. Mary Jane Epps, associate professor of biology at Mary Baldwin University, spent many months quiet in the Appalachian forests, watching the world. I started wondering about the azalea pollination, she says. Many flowers hold their parts close, anthers and pistils hunched together to draw in the fuzzy bottom bee, the vibrating frenetic fly, the trundling beetle, and the tremulous hummingbird. Not azaleas. They fling their pollen-dusted anthers out in all directions like worn-out party horns, too far apart for bee or beetle to reconcile. The more we look at them, the more intriguing the little mysteries we find they have to offer, Epps says. Epps planted herself near flame azalea bushes in the Appalachian Mountains to see what might show up to drink their nectar and spread their pollen. She didn't have to wait long. From the canopy came an eastern tiger swallowtail, all yellows and blacks and blues. About the size of a human palm, it represents one of our state's largest butterfly species. When a butterfly like an eastern tiger swallowtail lands on a flame azalea bush, it flaps its tremendous gentle wings, brushing those party horns and coating itself in pollen. As the butterfly hunts for nectar, it keeps flapping, transferring pollen from flower to flower. Watching this, Epps realized that flame azaleas rest gape-mouthed because they are calling for large butterflies to come home to them. When Epps saw who handled azaleas best at her study site, she was floored. Here is a plant whose flowers are visited by lots of species, so it would be natural to assume that it could be pollinated by all sorts of things. Other butterfly species can work flame azalea flowers too, but large butterflies like the eastern tiger swallowtail seem tailor-made for the job. They begin flying in March, right when azalea blossoms open, and continue into early fall after azaleas have faded. Azaleas and butterflies have been meeting this way since long before in antiquity. It wasn't until Epps looked at them in the woods in this decade that we all saw the ancient connection between the two. Understanding even the most seemingly common occurrences in this life requires wondering and noticing, two abilities that each of us has. We can all find something astonishing in the everyday if we only pay attention. In China, where many of our azalea species originated, the plants are sometimes called the thinking of home bush. Those of us who leave North Carolina might notice that azaleas aren't common outside the Southeast. We have the long summer days. We have the right dirt for it. We also have the massive, soft wings flapping through the air, seeking rest and a little something sweet in the embrace of those wide-open petals. We might not realize what we're missing when we leave, but we'll know it when we see it. The soft place to land, the sweetness inside. Well, that sound means we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be back to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and they can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.